Hello and welcome to the Barefoot Coaching Make a Change to Make a Difference podcast. I'm Adam, and in this series, I'll be speaking to inspirational people who have made a change in their lives in order to make a difference for themselves, for others, and for the world at large. Expect real stories, insights, and wisdom from coaches and non-coaches alike. This is the Make a Change to Make a Difference podcast. Welcome back to the podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by Dame Jackie Daniel, CEO of Newcastle upon Tyne Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. Dame Jackie began her NHS career as a nurse before moving into NHS management. She's been a chief executive officer for the last 20 years and in 2017 was recognised in the Queen's New Year's Honours for her services to healthcare. In this inspiring episode, Jackie shares how the underpinnings of her coach training with Barefoot helped her to handle some of her most challenging chief executive roles within the NHS. We also talk about Jackie's passion for supporting resilience and well-being, where she introduces her framework for developing the right mindsets and behaviours in NHS leaders, promoting self-care and creating operating and governance structures that foster engagement and connection. A very warm welcome to the Barefoot Podcast, Dame Jackie Daniel. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure. And I commented before, we're doing this virtually and I get to see into your absolutely beautiful office, which is gorgeous. Whereabouts are you joining us from today?
So I'm joining you from Newcastle. Actually, our hospital is in the city centre. It's very much part of the community here. So I can see a fabulous Newcastle football ground as I look out of the window, lots of trees. A rather magnificent statue of Queen Victoria. Obviously, the hospital's named after her. So it's very lovely, old and new buildings, but right in the heart of the city where healthcare should be, really.
Absolutely, yes. No doubt we're going to talk about your work in healthcare throughout our conversation. I like to start at the beginning because you've had a long relationship with Barefoot and I'm interested in where that first started for you, how you first found your way to us.
Yeah, well, clearly some magic was happening because I've got maybe two-thirds the way into my career. So I was a chief executive, started in the NHS probably 41 years ago as a nurse, then worked, you know, for probably 10 years at board level and have been a chief exec the last 20 years. So I was into my kind of chief exec tenure, but really as a lifelong learner, was really looking to hone my skills. By that time, I'd begun to appreciate just how much time I spend working with people in the business, you know, and with an executive team, with the board of directors. But it's a very people-based business, healthcare, as you can well imagine. And I'd used coaches all of my career. They've been really, really important part of my development. But I thought, do you know what, if I'm going to invest in coaching for myself and really learn how to not just think I know something about it, but actually learn properly, I really want the best coaching program. So as you would do, I did lots of research. I just loved what I found when I discovered Barefoot in an accredited program. And I guess as soon as I sort of started to scratch the surface, have the conversation with Kim and a couple of the team, talk to other people who've done it, I thought, do you know what? Because it's quite an investment, your whole self. You bring your whole self to that kind of practice and that kind of learning. But it was clearly high quality and vibrant and progressive.
Absolutely. What struck me as you were sharing, particularly that vibrancy, it just fills me up because that's still here today, 15 years later. And I love that you had that experience. And I'm also really pleased that other people are having that same experience today. What made you want to get into the business of people to start with? What sort of led you to decide you were going to train as a nurse?
I kind of fell into it, Adam, to be honest, by accident. I flunked my O-levels. It's a bit interesting when you look back on your career, having picked up several degrees and things now and indeed an honour.
Yes.
You know, to think I was really starting from humble beginnings and I flunked. And then you could do it. It wasn't a degree-led programme in nursing. But I thought, do you know what? There was something about it that drew me to apply. Within several weeks, I can honestly promise you that I'd fallen in love with the ability to, I guess, provide care and treatment for people when they're at the most vulnerable, really. But also the fact that people have a really deep relationship with healthcare. We're deeply affected by what goes on for our families, our friends, you know, and those memories, good and bad, continue through probably generations, in actual fact, of that experience. So I think I kind of got that really early on and thought, oh, hello, that hands-on one-to-one with the patient is really precious. But, you know, leading and managing a team, a ward of 30 patients, and then I just went on and very quickly I was leading hospitals and bigger hospitals and different hospitals because what you're doing really matters and that matters to me.
I love that. What were your hopes at the point you enrolled onto the coach training program? What did you set out with an aim or mission in mind?
Well, I think in its broadest terms, it was to do my job much more effectively, to really be able to offer competently support for my teams. You do spend an awful lot of time as a leader in health, supporting those around you. It's probably the most powerful thing you're able to do. You're a long way removed from the patient. So in actual fact, your art and your science only works through the people you're working with. You're only ever as good as those people. So I really hoped I could support people much more effectively. And I hoped that I would, that growth in my skills and expertise as an individual and my ability to lead in some really challenging times, that I'd learn an awful lot about myself as well. And I think that is true. I think it's quite challenging, the program, because you know, you do have to do that sort of deeper introspection and really come to some tough juxtapositions and crossroads on a number of issues. And I think that knowing yourself is a really important part of effective coaching.
It absolutely is. We talk about who you are is how you coach and how you show up, and what the course does, as you've brilliantly described, is makes you look inwards about how you are showing up and the light you shine and at times perhaps the shadow that you cast. And this introspective work brings all of that to the surface. So to quote something you said right at the beginning, it's an investment in all sorts of ways.
It is. And, you know, can be quite challenging, but you feel very kind of safe in that space. And there's lots of room for that kind of exploration, of feedback, you know, the diversity of thought in terms of content, I thought was really excellent and way surpassed my expectations. It was really very good. And the development is really stretching, but it's inspiring as well. And it's highly motivating, I think, for people who are in the business of working with other people, whether you're going to go on to be, you know, a full-time coach or whether somebody like me trying to incorporate it into the way that you practice. I've no regrets, absolutely no regrets.
Fantastic. And I love that you've pulled that out as well, because this isn't a program about necessarily learning to be a coach. It's about developing, practicing coaching skills that you can apply in any area of your life. And we talk about, you know, you can come on this program and you can just use it to be a better friend or a better parent. You could use it in your job as you did, or actually you can decide to take another route, you know, and become a either in-house coach or, you know, set up your own practice.
Exactly.
And you shared that your reason for joining was to help you in your day job. I'm wondering how that turned out for you.
Well, I'd like to think, I mean, hindsight is always wonderful, isn't it? The rearview mirror, see you back a long way. A lot happened after my time at Barefoot. I mean, it's probably safe to say I've held some of the most challenging chief executive roles in health. I think it's not too strong a statement to say I could not have handled myself and those jobs, those roles, and the things I had to do. There's some very difficult things as a part of those roles. I wouldn't have had the underpinnings to do those roles without it. I think I didn't necessarily appreciate that as fully as I do now with hindsight, but it's certainly true.
Yeah. I mean, there's the obvious that comes to mind in terms of the healthcare profession and what we've experienced in the last few years. It may show up in our conversation, it may not, but you were talking about some challenges that you'd experienced in which your learnings on the course had sort of helped to support you. I'm wondering if you're happy to share a bit more about that.
I mean, there are probably a couple of examples, but perhaps the best example, Adam, is my time spent at Morecambe Bay as the chief executive there. It was a hospital at the time known for all the wrong reasons, and it failed mothers, families and babies, basically, some really awful deaths which could have been avoided. But on taking the job, you begin to appreciate that actually, like most cultures, you know, there wasn't just one part that was problematic. It was, and it needed, I'm going to just use the phrase, a complete rebuild in every sense of the word, kind of from a leadership, structural, cultural, patient safety, so system, everything needed rewiring, reworking and resetting. And importantly, those families that we'd failed, you know, one of the most challenging things I think you can do as a health leader is face people whom the services that you provide have failed. I mean, that's really hard, actually. So trying to work through processes of almost, to use the phrase, kind of truth and reconciliation, people who've lost loved ones, is very difficult. And it, of course, it wasn't just me. I worked with teams of midwives who were run through this process. There were other teams within the hospital who'd all been through an appreciation that actually something was very wrong about what was happening and that needed to change. So, you know, it was a slow build, a slow rebuild, but really a cultural transformation that just tested the limits of what I had done as a leader previously. And being done under very public view over multiple years. So under the headlights of the, rightly so, of the Care Quality Commission, of the press and all of the media. And, you know, there was a lot of emotion, understandably. This is what I mean about the business of healthcare. It really touches people's lives. When we do wonderful, wonderful things, it is absolutely, totally amazing. But, you know, do get things wrong. And I think understanding how you work through some of those issues and actually come out the side with everybody feeling as though there's been a fair, transparent, open process where there's lessons being learned.
I mean, yeah, amazing. There are two things that have come up for me. The first is, I mean, wow, what a challenge to take on. And I'm interested in what made you look at that, let's call it an opportunity, and say, I'll take that. I can do that. And then the second piece is, in what way coaching helped you and supported you through that process. But if we start with the what made you look at that and go, yeah, I can make a difference here.
I think what brought me into the NHS, Adam, really, which is I believed that by that point I had sufficient experience. I'd already been leading organisations for about a decade at that time. And I'd kind of grown up through the service. So I think having had a kind of clinical background is really important in certain circumstances, particularly where you've got patient safety issues. So I felt I got the grounding. I also deeply felt for the communities that that trust serves. It's always been a part of the world that I've had a lot to do with in terms of my family. It's part of the world where, you know, I'd frequently visit on holiday with my parents, and I knew people in those communities. But it's a challenging community to provide healthcare to because it's very, you know, the distances between hospitals are huge. They're sometimes quite isolated communities without transport, good transport links and that kind of thing. So I just felt that this population deserved better. And I don't know, as someone that you think, well, you know, I can probably make a difference. I mean, I didn't know for sure. But the point about the underpinning of coaching, not just for those that I work with, but also self, was, did I have the resilience? Did I know how to look after myself well enough to do what I needed to do for others? And I think the barefoot knowledge and experience and the skills that I learned really, really you know, it starts with you, doesn't it? If you're not able to stand the heat in the furnace, and believe you and me, it was hot. And I'd have probably tried to do my best, maybe survived for a couple of years before dropping off. But I didn't. And I learned a lot through that. But also, when you're in a session with some of the professionals, that, you know, you're having a conversation about, well, what happened there in terms of the care, the failures to care, the issues that went on in the treatment of some of those babies and their families, and trying to work through some really complex and difficult issues with individuals, I think that's really where I saw it come to the, those skills come to the fore. Those are difficult conversations, the most difficult conversations to have. And then, you know, building back and knowing that the learning is happening, that relationships are improving and culture is changing, knowing when to also celebrate and say, look, this is incredibly difficult for everybody, but look what we've done, look what we're doing. Look at the improvements that we can see for patients that are being treated today, you know. So that appreciation, the need to celebrate and the need to really celebrate the remarkable efforts of people.
Yeah. I'm drawn to the idea of you using those coaching skills in what some call retrospectives, where something has happened, an incident has occurred, and it requires investigation in a way that, throughout the investigation at least, doesn't apply judgment. We uphold people with unconditional positive regard, and we look at the facts. So that struck me as you were.
A really important part of it, Adam, actually. And, you know, sometimes coaching people using those sorts of skills to say, actually, you're in the wrong job.
Ah.
I don't mean starting from that position, but appreciating that people are stuck or they are struggling. I think that's also important, you know, helping people work through when it's time to move on.
Hmm. How did you know it was time for you to move on from that experience?
That was a really hard one because I loved my role there. But another opportunity kind of, you know, came, and I was asked to look at a role up here in Newcastle, which was a different kind of transformation, actually. It was still all about the people, all about the culture, but a very different hospital with a very good reputation for patient safety and quality. So no worries there, but some of the deeper cultural issues about how teams were working with teams, how, you know, the leadership had been working there for many years before I came, very kind of prescriptive, centrally driven, dictatorial. My brief was, could you just change the culture, Jackie?
Just that.
And have been here, obviously, for 5 years, but this has been a wholly different learning. It's a very much bigger trust. We've got 18,000 employees, you know, a turnover of 1.4 billion. We're very important nationally for all sorts of very highly specialised services. But it's been a different work, but, you know, a continuation of some of those themes, which is actually it's really all about working with leadership teams and on culture and finding a way to communicate. I guess show people the art of the possible in terms of how operating systems can work differently and from a different starting point.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Adam.
You know, I was thinking, there really is no single route to arriving at the Barefoot Coach Training Programme, is there?
No, there isn't. People come from all walks of life, from the armed forces to aromatherapy, HR to hairdressing, and teaching to taxi driving. But regardless of where they arrive from, they all share the same desire, and that is to make a change, to make a difference.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. So whether people listening want to coach friends and family, coach at work, or in a new career as an accredited coach, when it comes to coach training, no two journeys are the same. You can find out where the Barefoot Line can take you by visiting barefootcoaching.co.uk. We touched on resilience and well-being earlier, and I know that those are two things that are important to you. And am I right in thinking that you created your own framework around well-being, your own model? Would you be happy to share with our listeners a bit about that?
I would. I mean, it was developed very much in, when I was in Morecambe Bay, Adam. I thought, how do I describe to people what I'm trying to do here? And it is quite complex. People can see this reference. You can, you know, Google it and find reference to it on in my blogs and so on and so forth. So because it's an unfinished book to be published at the moment, so it is quite complex based on a lot of hard theory around, I guess, psychology, social, behavioural economics, etc. But essentially, there are three domains to the framework. The first is all about leadership, and it is something I'm passionate about. And it is about, you know, how we develop the right mindsets and behaviours in leaders. It starts from that principle. How do we also equip leaders to really look after themselves? So that's that might be about their own access to coaching and development, but, you know, how do you keep honing your alchemy as a leader? You know, we all, you can almost feel the different levels of progression as you get more and more experience. And there's lots of technical stuff around the development programs that sit in that leadership domain. But again, it's art and science. You know, we talk a lot about behaviors in meetings that I chair. I talk a lot about the things that have not been said in the room, paying attention to body language and temperature checking around how people are feeling. So a lot around that. Leadership is everything. And I don't just mean the senior level. I mean every level, right down to department and ward level and even beyond that. The second bit of the framework is what we were talking about, which is the operating and governance framework. And in healthcare, it's fairly easy to describe, well, it's not easy to describe, but having a good vision and strategy, knowing what values you're working with across the organisation, and are those values developed by the staff themselves? They need to be. They need to live them. And then after that, have you got good, I'm going to call it ward-to-board structures of governance? Have you got a connection right the way through the organisation, which a big, large organisation like mine across multiple sites doing a whole myriad of things with 18,000 staff, how do you make sure that everybody's connected at some point in that, what is the more formal hierarchy? And it is structural, it is a bit hierarchical, and it has to flow. The mechanics of that are like a well-oiled engine, and there is a way to do it and a way not to do it. But it's only part of the story, because if your leaders are working well on that very formal operating structure framework, there are probably two-thirds of your organisation that are not engaged at all. So the third domain is around how you amplify and accelerate opportunities for improvement, for engagement in the field, in the organisation. And that is much less formal. The work that we do there, we call it our System 2. The work that we do there is free-flowing. It's driven by the staff. It's like, what's important to you? And we will try and support as many projects, quick pieces of work, start and finish stuff, little communities of interest around things. That is where thousands of flowers bloom. And people don't have to worry about using a policy or going through a formulaic response to something. They can just be supported to get on. And in my experience, what that does is get people, it probably gives you, I reckon, and the literature would suggest it gives you about 25% more acceleration on ability to improve and spread. So we were one of the, well, we were the first organisation in the world to declare a climate emergency. And I didn't do it because in my top drawer, I've got a big plan about how to make our what we do more sustainable. It was staff out there that was saying, you know, we can tell you how to remove plastic from the organisation or do litter picks out or plant 1,000 more trees, or let's get a completely electric fleet of vehicles that we use across the trust. We built the plan because we got staff saying, this is what's important to me and my children and everything else. And that gave me the courage to declare a climate emergency.
Wow.
So I don't think we can underestimate, if you can just keep connected, and I call this building relational fabric. It's more than engagement. It's like that bit that connects me to you and and helps us understand that I care about what you care about. Now, I'm describing it in really simplistic terms, Adam. We've got lots of programs which make all of that happen.
Sure.
Lots and lots of programs that staff can hop on and hop off of and get involved with. But the whole framework as a whole, I think, gives you a way of viewing the operations in an organisation like this and doing it quite well.
Is it something that will be rolled out across multiple trusts? Is that the plan?
I think the NHS is really interesting because it's a national health service, but it's all the trusts that exist, and there are hundreds of them,
yeah,
all do it slightly differently, which is important because, you know, it's got to feel made and born of, in our case, Newcastle. But I think the concepts in the framework I've described to you, most chief executives would say we deploy most of those. I think the magic is trying to keep the operation running in that way all of the time.
Yeah.
And constantly looking at those areas and paying equal attention. There's a tendency when it all gets really tough in healthcare just to look at the operating framework, system number one, because it's all about performance management. It's all about how many patients can you see and treat, and you miss the opportunity to engage in a deeper way with your staff. And that's where it comes unhooked.
And those are arguably the times where a leader needs to pull on the collective wisdom of the people doing the work to help find a solution. But as you describe, when as leaders we're in states of stress, strain or overwhelm, we can go into just do this mode.
Yeah.
And what I love about the framework and the model that you described is I can see how coaching is weaved into every bit of that. On our Leader as Coach program, we talk about the person best placed to find a solution to the problem is the person who's experiencing the problem, the person that is on the front line dealing with the day-to-day. Like you say, they know. They can give you 10, 100 ways to reduce your plastic count if you take the time to ask.
You're absolutely right. That's where group coaching can really add value. We do some of it ourselves. We bring in people to do work with us where we need that. It's recognising that actually it's time well spent. Really is.
And I'm definitely getting a sense of the sort of pioneering nature of your work, that what drives you, which is absolutely fascinating. And I'm wondering how that relates to the honour that you received, Dame Jackie Daniel. Can you share a bit about how that came about?
Yeah, well, these are weird things. I mean, they're lovely things. but I had no idea. In fact, I'd come away, I was put forward for Chief Exec of the Year type award, and I've been down to a big ceremony in London and actually not won it. So I've come away feeling a bit deflated, and my partner said, I think you'd better look at that envelope. It was late and I was tired and I'm a bit grumpy. And of course it was a letter. First thing you get is a letter from the Prime Minister saying, can we put your name forward? Would you be willing to accept? And I had to read it several times. So you know, when I actually appreciated, no, this isn't just any honour, it's a damehood. And I suppose it is quite unusual. Normally, you might get some recognition at OBE or CBE, and then, this is what we're going to recommend. And of course, you don't really know who's sponsoring you with it. You never know. I still don't know.
Wow. So you don't know where that nomination came from originally?
No, because they take a lot of care. Obviously, this is something I still know little about, but, you know, there is a very rigorous process to test every element of whether you've done what you said. And they ask a lot of people to comment. And I don't know, but, you know, I think some of the colleagues, maybe some of the families I work with at Morecambe Bay had been part of that process. I don't know. But, wow, you know, you know, you think, actually, I was just doing what I was doing. And actually, I hope that many of the people that I work with felt that they'd been a big part of that. And so, yeah, it's great. And now knowing other dames, we're starting to create a bit of a society of women that have been honoured. And we're now talking about, well, what can we do to try and support other women and other people in society? So we're looking at areas that we might just you use the word pioneer, but, you know, be a little bit pointy and challenging in the best possible way, but just to try and get some progression in areas that really still make me feel very sad about levels of poverty and inequality that we have in the country. Actually, that's gotten worse post-COVID. So, you know, I found a new community of fabulous women that are determined to carry on trying to make a difference.
Yeah, and paying it forward, using the status and the forum to pay it forward and carry on doing that work in the world that you started right at the point of deciding you were going to become a nurse. It leads me on beautifully then to think about where next. Where next for you?
I don't know. I it's a really great question, and I am quite a reflective person, so I'm always thinking about the kind of next chapter. And I don't know. All I do know is that I couldn't possibly think about at the moment, you know, not working and not continuing this plight. I do think there's lots of avenues I've probably not explored yet in my career. I would love to get that book finished, Adam. I would love to do more of what we're doing now. I do a lot of national work, but obviously quite a lot of my work is spent within the hospitals here. So I'm open to ideas. And I think when you get to those transitions in your life and those points where you're now thinking, well, what about the next sort of 5 years? What about the next chapter? And that's where you need a good coach. And I've got
absolutely
some time booked in. But just to explore this sort of endless sense of improvement, of development. And as you can probably hear, I can feel it in my voice and my response. You know, it's incredibly energizing. If, like me, you're a person that's from time to time is always thinking, well, how can I do more? How can I do better? What could I do differently?
And also, I got the sense from you sort of looking back at your career and everything that you've achieved, you couldn't have planned for any of that. You were doing your work and you were doing the stuff that you loved. And then things happen, right? The universe has a way of aligning and showing you where you need to go.
It is interesting, isn't it? I think you're right. I didn't have a ready-made roadmap. I just knew I wanted to be leading and trying to make a difference. That's what gets me up in the morning. That's what enables me to sleep well. Yeah, making that degree of difference isn't always easy, but it's really rewarding.
And making a difference, you absolutely are. And that's going to take its toll. You know, we can't be going in fifth, sixth gear all the time. When you aren't working, how do you like to rest, recharge, recuperate? What's that side of your life like?
Quiet, Adam, because I am, most people would say, Jackie, you know, we can see you're an extrovert. I'm absolutely not. I'm a real introvert. And what we know, don't we, when we do jobs like this, is you just learn to do that element of it. So I do national conferences. I, you know, do lots of different media stuff. And I can do it because I've learned to do it. But what it does is completely wipes me out. So I recognize now what does that for me, what really zaps my batteries. And I've developed a way of managing my diary, actually color coding it, which means that I can look at a profile of my week or my month, and I can spot in advance where that's going to happen.
Right.
I can't always change what's happening in my appointments. Usually that's not up to me. But what I can change is what I do before, after, you know, the weekend. And so I build in, I use the term, but those restorative niches. You know, it could be tonight. I know that I will need a walk along the coast near where I'm living up here just to decompress. But I do like exercising. So I generally get up at about 5:30 and I'm on my Peloton, which I discovered pre-lockdown. It's one way where I can do, if I don't get chance at the end of the day, sometimes if the day's a bit long, I know I've done some cardio. I love doing it. It just fires me up and it means that I start the day in the right place. But that well-being is really important to me. So Peloton, lovely walks with the dog and my partner. I prefer to just go out and be in a quiet space with as few people as possible. And some of that time, you know, that's really important. I like reading. I don't read many novels. I read lots of factual books. I like quiet space to do that, listen to some music, connect with nature, really. I like being outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah. You reminded me of a model which I used to love and use all the time, but haven't actually reached for a while. And it's the four energies, the idea that we are made up of four energies. There's intellectual, spiritual, emotional, and physical. And you talking about, for example, if your intellectual energy at the end of the day is just drained, how might you then recharge? Or your physical energy is drained because you've just been sat in, you know, one seat whilst different faces appear and come and go.
That balance, you can feel when it's in check. I can go 20% faster, 25% faster, I can go further, but I have to really work at making sure I maintain that. Because, you know, if you're having a difficult day or an off day, which we all have, or you can, you know, an off week, it makes a hell of a big difference to actually your own performance and what you're able to do with others.
It does. And it comes back to a theme throughout our conversation, actually. It comes back to self and knowledge and awareness of self in order to be of best service to ourselves, but actually to be of service to others as well.
It does.
Dame Jackie Daniel, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you. And as a way of closing us out, I am wondering what it is you'd like to leave our listeners with.
I'd like to leave the listeners, Adam, with a thought that I've used, tested, and grown to understand a bit more, but is really the value of pushing boundaries. They're rarely, in fact, if ever, where you think they are. You know, I think we always assume we're going to walk two paces and hit the wall. My experience is it's probably 30 paces out. And this is a big world full of learning and full of development. And just keep gently nudging those boundaries, getting out of your comfort zone. And it is so transformative. So, yeah, that's what I'd leave people with.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, then be sure to subscribe to get alerts each time we release a new episode. Just search Barefoot Coaching Podcast wherever you get yours. Oh, and if you aren't already following us on social media, then do just search for Barefoot Coaching.